Go. All right. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Late Night Shots Podcast, episode 65. We guys have an interesting topic of discussion for you guys today. We're going to be doing the Gable Stevenson versus whole AJ Ferrari thing that's been going down. You know, it started with a couple tweets about whatever, ended up with something. Then, so the basis of this is AJ Ferrari said, essentially, don't make me come up to heavyweight and you'll lose to another Italian kid. And then Gable was like, don't come up to heavyweight with that attitude. Sincerely, your new father. So it was like, all right, that goes down. Now, you know, I've kind of been talking about it. I didn't think AJ Ferrari was going to All-American starting off this season after he lost Noah Adams. Because, you know, the basis of my logic for that was Noah Adams was really overrated in my eyes, which fell through pretty damn well, not All-Americaning. But, you know, Ferrari, after that, he looked to be on a hot streak. You know, after he won Big 12, I said he might just fuck around and win it. And that's exactly what he did, you know. At Big 12s, yeah. Noah Adams was in that bracket. Stephen Buchanan was in that bracket. Tanner Sloan was in that bracket. Sloan, in my eyes, was the best dude in that bracket, but he didn't place. But, you know, Buchanan did place eighth. Good for him. He had a great season this year. You know, after Ferrari put up 13 points on him, just watching that match, looking how there's a retake game played in, I could say pretty handedly he would beat Noah Adams. It wouldn't be by a lot, but he would beat him. Just looking at how that match with Buchanan played out and how Buchanan was able to open up Noah Adams in that match. You know, I said it at Nationals, if AJ Ferrari gets past Jacob Warner in the quarters, he's my pick to win it all. No, I said it, you know, just because I was thinking that there would be a chance at the beginning. You know, got a lot of shit from a lot of people, but like I made it seem as a joke, so nobody really took it too seriously. But now that it happened, it's like, damn, you know, he kind of handled Miles Me. That seems like the craziest one to me.
Yeah.
Like he kind of bodied him. I mean, it's small though, so I'm not going to say anything too much about that.
What's kind of just interesting to me is that, like, I feel like AJ's style is kind of like all the best matches are very, very low scoring, and having re-attacks as good as AJ is, I mean, personally, it's why I thought he was going to win, yeah. Right? His re-attacks are really solid. He can keep the match low scoring, and whenever you keep the match low scoring and you have good re-attacks, Zane Rutherford. Yeah. Now, Zane Rutherford in freestyle, because in college, obviously, Rutherford would just rack up points on people, but AJ Ferrari is, for the most part, against really high-level opponents, winning low-scoring matches, and he does that because everything he does is very high percentage. Yeah. You can have guys who are very good at low percentage, high risk, flashy, good-looking shit, but then you get like Anthony Valencia.
And you know, somebody said that Spencer Lee's season was better than Zane Rutherford that one year.
Not even close. I gotta disagree with that heavily.
That shit pissed me off. I'm sorry. I like Iowa, like, but some of you guys are just, like, different. It pisses me off. No, like the ones that are chill about it, you're like, whatever. But, like, bandwagon fans come out of nowhere. Like, half of you guys were Penn State fans in 2019. Now you're just Iowa fans. But I necessarily don't really care too much. I'll go for Penn State and RU. I'm Iowa one this year. You know, people want to make that argument that they clinched it before the finals, but they barely clinched it before the finals, and they only won one match in the finals. So they didn't win by that much.
It's got to be that they'd be like just a shitty job at peaking. That's what it's got to be.
Yeah. I don't know.
Not as good a job as it's like Penn State.
If Suriano was still here, you have to assume he would have beaten Lee at 125 if Lee wrestled like that against Brandon Courtney. And that just goes to say because he had two torn ACLs. He's the one guy I'll give a pass. But Kemmerer tanked. Like, as a Penn State fan, I said Kemmerer was on another level. I physically cannot tell you how that happened. Like, Starachi low-key just muscled that double on him, and he got it. Nick Lee, I said it was going to be Jaden Ironman. That was going to be a close match either way. Lee, it just came down to conditioning on that one. For real. Like, an Ironman was gassed. That's all that really is. I wasn't too surprised about that. I know both of us picked Dayton Fix. I'm never picking against RBY again.
Neither
level,
am I.
The level of improvement this dude has made, I like, you know, you consider because he beat DeSanto, you kind of have to assume that I thought Fix was kind of going to handle DeSanto more than he actually did. But again, Fix is a guy keeping a close match with Fix and actually scoring on Dayton Fix are two completely different things.
Yes. You know?
Unless Nick Soriano comes back next year at 133, my pick is RBY again. And by more than this year.
Where the hell is Nick Soriano? What, he competed at Matteo Pellicone?
He's already qualified for trials. He doesn't care. He's qualified through all these events. Has the U.S. even qualified 65 yet? I don't think so. I was hearing that. I'm not sure if they were just tripping in the comment section. Because if they didn't qualify 65, that is a big problem. Because if Yanni does somehow get past Zane, he matches up the best internationally with everybody. I don't think he's going to win gold, but he could definitely get on the Olympic podium. You know, I was talking about in the last episode, my boy Paul, huge Cornell fan. He was talking about, again, Yanni versus Nick Lee. He said, Nick Lee may be the one guy in a folk style match he might be scared of. And that's just because he presents a lot of problems there. And I know people were talking about the whole Yanni Hodge thing because, again.
Wait, what does Yanni have to do with the Hodge right now?
No, if the Cornell was still here.
Oh.
Yeah. And again, it always plays the fact that Yanni's never been a huge bonus point guy in folk style.
Yeah, no, not really.
Yeah, and that's very interesting to me. He always has like the most entertaining matches, but he never seems to rack up points. That's mainly because he never really goes big on any top offense.
I think and I wouldn't know because I've never wrestled with him. It's just Yanni, like, he's so cerebral.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like, if you look at a guy like Spencer Lee, that's a combination of being cerebral and freakishly strong for your size. Now, again, I've never wrestled Yanni, and I can't knock him. And this is not a knock on him. He's probably physically stronger than me. But I feel like he's just not, like, that physically strong whenever you compare him to, like, the guys at his weight class who have so much horsepower.
Yeah, you have him better than Jaden Meyerman, right? And then if you look at a guy like Nick Lee, right, it comes down to one of the most cerebral wrestlers. Two of the best cerebral wrestlers, honestly, in the whole NCAA. I don't think anybody would argue that. Maybe you have some other guys, but Yanni is a cerebral wrestler. Nick Lee is a game planner, right?
Yeah.
And if Yanni was there, you'd have to assume that Jaden Ironman and Nick Lee are going to be 2 and 3 seeds.
Yeah.
And then Rivera would be Tariq Wilson 4, you know. I'll say Tariq was not pinned, but it is what it is. You know, I don't want to be like this because I know I've talked a lot of shit to Iowa. I don't really care, but I would have loved to see Jaden Ironman get pinned in the cradle. Nonetheless, you know, it low-key pisses me off because I remember guys were talking so much shit when I picked Nick Lee over Jaden Ironman, but what's the dude's name? Fanko Wrestling, Josiah?
I believe.
If you watch his latest video, he was going off about how Penn State coming in next year. Big thing I want to talk about. Griffith may be in the transfer portal. He is in the transfer portal. Stanford doesn't reinstate the program because I doubt he's just going to give up wrestling. One of the biggest landing spots is Penn State.
You think he ends up there?
I hope he does. I mean, I'm not against it. I wouldn't be mad if he comes back home to New Jersey, like Rutgers or Princeton. Princeton seems like a good option. I'm not exactly sure what his major is. Because I just haven't looked up too much into that. But I would not be mad if he goes to Rutgers or something.
Rutgers would probably be a good choice considering Princeton has – is it Quincy? That's a Princeton – Kenny's a
– Quincy's at 57.
Oh, Quincy went –
Kennedy Russell's at – yeah. Okay. And Kenny's the – Kenny's the dad. Yeah, Kenny's the dad.
Yeah, because I've just been thinking about this for the past couple of days. Either Facundo's going to wait a long time until, like, someone moves up, or Facundo's going to wrestle 65 for Penn.
Mm-hmm.
So if Shane went to Penn State, I don't know what the whole situation – I guess he would redshirt. Has Facundo graduated yet? I think he has.
Yeah.
Is Facundo older than me?
Did Facundo qualify for the trials?
I haven't seen that anywhere.
Okay. You see, the thing I'm going to say here is, right, if Shane goes there – 65. Joe Lee went 0-2 at Nationals. I'm pretty sure they're going to give him the spot over Joe Lee. Right. Storaci at 74, Brooks at 84, Beard at 97, and Kirk at heavyweight. That's like a forming murderer's row.
Yeah.
You know, Griffith at 57, I doubt it.
I don't think he can make it. He's tall.
Yeah, no, I know. He was wrestled 160 in high school, senior year. Was he a junior now? It's a very interesting thing to think about because Facundo, 57, possibly. Because what's his name? Garrett Nijenhaus from Purdue wrestled 182 in high school, and he's 65 now. He beat John Poznanski in high school 8-4 at 182, and he cut to 165. Griffin Perry out won a state title at 160. He's 149 as a senior. Like, it's possible. I doubt it. I just don't think that's the best thing for him, but.
I don't know exactly. But I assume those guys are shorter and stockier than Griffith, though. Like, if you look at the champions photo, Griffith's, like, the same height as Ferrari, and that's, like, 6 foot. That's a gigantic 165er.
Yeah, no, he's huge. No, I called him winning last year, too, so I'm happy about that. But
yeah.
Ferrari could have been at Penn State, too.
Oh, what could have been?
But anyway,
I wanted him to go to Penn State. My logic was that it's such a good upper weight room.
Yeah. I think with his work ethic, he's going to be good either way, but it all just comes down to, does Kale really want a guy who would talk that much on social media on their team?
Absolutely not.
And that's just the thing where it comes down to Bubba Jenkins, too. Bubba Jenkins is a hell of a fucking wrestler. Nobody's going to deny that. You know, obviously they're all good now, but it comes down to risk versus reward. You could have potential five-time national champion, which can basically, you basically have the reincarnation of yourself in that room. Like, people are going to hate you for saying this, but AJ Ferrari could go down as one of the GOATs of college wrestling, and that's just a fact of it. So could Carter Soracci. Yeah.
If he's a five-time champ,
I wouldn't consider that a legitimate five-time champ. When you go to all-time, I would just consider him a four-timer. That's really it. If he never
loses. Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, that just goes without being said, right? Because you can't. What are you going to do? That's more penalizing Kale Sanderson for being only a four-timer.
That's fair.
You know, that's the same thing it came towards when we're talking about Lee versus Gable. Giving Lee an advantage because he has two torn ACLs is like penalizing Gable. It's not rewarding Lee. Anthony Robles had one leg and he didn't win the Hodge.
Didn't he win the Hodge 1 year?
Nope. It was Jordan Burroughs, but like... That was what goes without being said. Who's in Jordan Burroughs' weight class? Andrew Howe?
Was that the... Yeah.
Yeah. I consider Andrew Howe a much better opponent than Mac McDonough. You know, Matt McDonough is good, but at this point in his career, he had a long way to go.
Yeah.
Before peaking. That's like, who'd you consider a better opponent? Like, Gable's four pins to Lee's five. That's pretty much negligible at that point. Unless it comes that close. Gabe was at two matches where he hasn't majored. Lee has one match where he hasn't majored. Lee's one match is against Brandon Courtney. Gable's two matches are against Greg Kirkfleet and Mason Paris.
Right.
Mason Paris, if he doesn't get the spot, he's gonna go he can go to the fucking NFL. Gable walks up WWE if he wants to. Kirkfleet can make the Olympic team. Or Gwizdowski this time around. I'd love to see Gwizdowski make it this time around. That's just me, but I wouldn't be surprised. I think if Gwiz makes it a third match, it's his to lose, but whatever. But again, with the Hodge, though, it would all come down to, again, the strength of schedule. That's where I see it come down to. It's like sportsmanship is like, but that's kind of like, okay. The sportsmanship is not going to swing it so much to that point where it's like unwinnable. Right. Yep. Strength of schedule, it hurts Lee. It's not like it hurts him a little bit. It hurts him a lot.
Yes.
Like, he's wrestled, I think, the weakest schedule of any national champ. I don't think he's beaten any of the placers except for Ragusan and Courtney.
Yeah.
That's working. And he gave up two take. He's given up, like, five or six takedowns. You know, obviously, yeah. I don't know about giving Griffith outstanding wrestler. But again, it doesn't always come down to how much you wrestle. It comes down to the purpose behind it.
Right.
You know, and we only knew about this after, so it's like, okay. You know, you can give him wrestler of the year or some shit, but that's like same thing as Hodge.
Yeah.
Isn't there, what's like this, what's the Sullivan Award for? That's like some other shit, right?
I cannot remember.
I can't either, but I've been saying that Gable's seasons, Lee's season are better than 90% of Hodgewood winners in the past. If any time is a time for a Co-Hodge trophy, this is it.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be mad if Lee wins it. Like, it's not like he's undeserving of it. It's just more penalizing a fantastic, never-before-seen season of heavyweight.
Yeah.
And something that will most likely never be seen again. Unless Kirkfilia makes the same amount of improvement that Gable has. I think he beats Paris next year. But that's really it. Back to the Gable, Stevenson versus AJ Ferrari. Do I sound sick at all? I'm like actually fucked up. My nose just like fucked up. But going back to this, you know, I know they're all talking. I made the meme about the super matchup. If Flo does that, you know, it's going to come down to the times. Like, is Gable going to let him last the whole 6 minutes just for money? Just for show? Or is he going to just toy with him immediately?
We'll probably toy with him.
Yeah, I'm not.
He doesn't get like any extra money for letting it go the whole 6 minutes.
I mean, they might.
And everyone would already be under the impression that like, everyone would already be under the impression that that is a likely outcome just because Gable's a showman.
You know, and I wanted to say something about I really have a hard time believing that David Taylor versus Jordan Burroughs was that close at 86. I really do think they made that close just because. Of how close it was at 74 or 86, it would just be common sense that David Taylor would demolish him. Letting giving a push out so we go down to criteria is like, I don't know.
It's just wrestling the match you need to wrestle to win. Like, a lot of wrestling coaches like to preach that, like, 100% effort at all times out there. Like, you know, if you're tired, you're doing it right. But, like, at the end of the day, whenever you're winning, like, those high-level matches, the real outcome sometimes is just only put in just enough effort to win.
Yeah.
So, whenever it comes to, like...
But you would have thought this would be a statement match from him, you know, because he's been waiting for it. He just wanted to win, right?
Yeah.
There was just something off about that that made it seem like he was trying to make it closer and closer. Because he scored pretty... Not that hard. You know, guaranteed, I'm assuming Burroughs was watching out for the cradle and it wasn't going to be two cradles like last time. Or I don't even know if that was last time, but that's probably the most iconic match between them two.
Yeah.
The whole cradles, Burroughs comes back, wins 7-6, right?
Yeah.
Oklahoma State and Minnesota normally have a duel. If they do, AJ bumps up.
Probably.
I mean, I don't see any reason he wouldn't. Austin Harris is a good head. Austin Harris had a hell of a run at heavyweight. He lost in round one to, like, the 5 seed. Won the round one wrestle back. Beat Matt Stenzel 7-4. Pinned Zach Elam. And lost to Kirk Fitt in the Bloods. Don't ask me how that numbers make sense anywhere, but he lost Kirkfleet in the Bloods. I kind of assumed Kirkfleet might be the one guy he can't throw, but just again, he's like, he's a fucking whatever you'd call him. Fucking tall, lanky motherfucker. That's the best thing I can put it. But it's going to be interesting to see the Olympic trials now. Like,
yeah.
Is Kuhn versus. You can't compare Schultz bullying around. Fucking Tony Cassiope around the mat with his hand fighting to Adam Kuhn.
No.
And that's where it becomes, because Schultz looks so dominant with his hand fighting, and it's impossible for me to just look over that. Like, he's not the best scorer. Like, the match with him and Kerfley was insane. 14-8. Schultz can move. And Schultz, with his leverages, may just be his time to make this Olympic team. I don't think you're going to find it anywhere. It was a weird match. Like, Kerfley, it's a lot stronger than people think. He lifted Schultz in the air with, like, one hand. But again, you're going to Gable versus Wiz. People are just going to go for Gable no matter what. An 8-4 win over Mason Barris? I don't know. Unless Gwizdowski is literally not progressed or regressed. I'm assuming Gwizdowski could do what he has to do at the peak for this event.
Yeah.
Because for him, it's not about winning a gold. Because that just seems out of realistic ability for him at this point. But if he makes the team, you know, he's an Olympian. That's and then he can bow out on a high note after this. He's like, what, he's like 29 after this? Heavyweights don't last long in this sport. So, I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah.
You know, Steve Mako, Tvalod Lagnev, and Nick Gwizdowski, you know. And if Gable doesn't make it this year, he just might be done with wrestling. You never know. No, if he is done, I wouldn't be too mad because, again, we have two other heavyweights who can fill in. I have faith that Paris or Kirk Fleet can get the job done at heavyweight. And then if Paris wants to run off to the NFL or Kirk Fleet to MMA, Gwizdowski's still the man. Who? No, if that were to happen, actually, who's there left to fill in? You know, Kirk Fleet's a big MMA boxing dude. So, I don't know. Like, to be completely honest, like, who would go heavyweight? Hear me out. If that were to happen, Snyder heavyweight, Cox in 97.
Holy fucking shit. No, sorry, I'm watching Cassiope Schultz. Jesus fucking Christ.
Schultz is hand fighting. Oh, yeah, were you watching one where Cassiope lifted him up in the air all the way up there?
Yeah, and then...
Dude, Schultz, like, Schultz is, like, very deceptive. You can have him above your head, but you will not take him down unless you finish that perfectly.
Schultz is huge. He's, what, like, 6'1", maybe, like, 250 pounds?
Schultz is, like, 270, dude. Cassiope's cutting heavyweight now.
Cassiope dwarfs him. What the?
Yeah, no, Cassiope got big.
Yeah, he's gigantic. Like, dude. What the fuck?
Dude, Tate Orndorff maybe qualified for Greco. In Greco, though, you have to assume Schultz would body. Schultz was bodying him with hand fighting, though. That's the crazy part in that match. He was moving Tony around.
That hurts, too. I mean, it's from, I don't know. I'm always big on Tate Orndorff just because, you know, he's from Washington and, like,
he's definitely way stronger
at Greco than any other style.
But again, that's a generational specimen in Kuhn, and that's a generational talent in Schultz.
Yeah.
It's last time they wrestled, size and strength won the match and technique lost. This time, it may just be a different story.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, Greco's thing where size has direct correlation.
Yeah. You
know? And we saw that in Hancock versus Vera. I don't know, was Angelo Vera or something like that? Versus D'Angelo Hancock at the Flow event. Hancock toyed with him.
Bodied him.
Hopefully this man gets a world medal, an Olympic medal, finally.
D'Angelo?
Yeah. Dude, he's been on the scene way too long, beating way too good of guys and just not peaking at the right time. Like, you know, hopefully, you know, I've said it, the whole Colton Schultz theory. I go with this one last time, right? Colton Schultz was born on the day that Rulon Gardner beat Alexander Karel, right?
Right.
Rulon Gardner, farm boy from Wyoming. We all know the story. Wasn't predicted to make the Olympic team. Did it. Wasn't predicted to make a run to the finals. Did it. Expected to be a possession bout. Pulled it out. Right?
Yep.
Colton Schultz not expected to make the Olympic team. Random. Yeah, sure. What if he's a farm boy from Colorado? Sure. But anyways, makes the team. Was not supposed to make the finals. Makes the finals. Beats Riza KL. Not supposed to be. Fuck no, he's not supposed to be Lopez. What if he does that? You know, granted, I'm a little bit ahead of myself here because he literally has wrestled some of the closest Greco matches. I mean, granted, Greco matches are normally close with high level, especially heavyweight, right?
Yeah.
Just because everybody's so good at hand fighting, it's hard to get guys out of position. He's almost lost a few times, and there's no even, like, saying that he even makes it to the trials finals. You know, that's where that comes into play. Robbie Smith is done wrestling, I'm assuming, right?
I believe so. I think he's just coaching and working with Beat the Streets.
Yeah, that sucks. I miss watching. I remember he pulled Lopez in one of the rounds in the Olympics and it was bad. It was a snap and go behind and four guard and three guts and it was over.
That arm throw he hit on Adam Kuhn was so fucking sick.
Yeah, it was. He hit it twice in like 10 seconds too.
Yeah, that's my favorite throw just by far. And I remember
forget how talented Adam Kuhn was. He literally made the Olympic trials finals in college.
Yeah.
The only difference is Snyder won it. You know, Gwizdowski made the Olympic trials finals too that year. Lost to, people really forget how talented this field is. And you have to assume, even in this field, Gable may just win it. And Schultz probably makes the finals. Kirk for the I wouldn't be surprised if he beats Gable in freestyle. Again, freestyle looks a lot more of a strong suit, but I really wouldn't be surprised if he beats Paris there either. Unless, because Paris has looked to not be able to hit the dump as much. On higher level opponents, because everybody's except for Tony, because Tony, I don't know what the fuck this dude's ever doing when he's wrestling Paris. It just looks like he never wrestles to his ability. No knock on Paris, but I don't know how Tony Cassio, a wrestler that good should definitely be able to stop that dump. Like if he gets you an outside shots, that's one thing, right? You're bigger and you're slower than him. He went through you twice, and it's just like
it's because Cassiope doesn't wrestle very laterally.
I figured that out, but you would think he wouldn't get pinned in that move that quick. You know, you think he would have learned from the first time, but because again, a guy like Hilger is not on the level of them two. A guy like Hilger got majored by Cassiope 8-0, but he always tends to hold a close match with Mason Paris. Again, Hilger's probably one of the more technically sound heavyweights. He just doesn't have the physical. He's just not there wrestling-wise yet. Because, again, people was like, oh, Mason Paris is a majority football player. So is Trent Hilger.
Yeah.
You know, Cassiope was bred to be a wrestler. Carefully was bred to be a wrestler. Gable was bred to be a wrestler. Mason Paris is playing catch-up at this point. Whether he can do it or not, that's where it depends.
Kirkfield, but it's just plain young. Impressive.
Yeah, it really
that
is. Dude's
that good. Coming out of high school, it was oh, is he going to play football or is he going
to... He was just wrestle? A genetic talent. He could have honestly done whatever sport he wanted to, you know, whether it be football. He would have excelled at
anything. And, it's crazy because he was so good at track and field, too. And, you look at him and he's oh, he's a thrower, right? No, he ran the goddamn hurdles.
Yeah, people come to that realization all the time just because he's a heavyweight, he's slow. But you put Kirk Fliett, a healthy curve, not a torn ACL, obviously, but... You put him against, I don't want to say Roman Bravo. You put him against Roman Bravo Young. It's a lot closer than you would think. Just a full sprint. It just looks like RBY's moving a lot faster because his stride's smaller.
Yep.
You know, how much does Usain Bolt weigh? 227, I think, was the last record thing at his Olympics. Some around 220, 230, or maybe 200. He's 6'5", though. Right? And he's out there moving. How big are these running backs in the NFL? 220, 230? Upwards of 250, 260.
Usain Bolt weighs 207 pounds.
207, not 227. Yeah, but you also...
Yeah, and I doubt he'll be heavier.
I mean, now he's probably heavier. He's just done competing.
Yeah.
He's probably living good. But, Gable right now is, 265? Right? If Gable wanted to get in, track form, he could just lose 15 pounds just like that. Because that 15 pounds isn't straight muscle. He would have abs. But, again, we've been over...
He could be a thrower now.
I mean, I doubt it. I think Gable could still run the 100 if he really wanted to. Not at a 10-second, but I'll give him 11-11-2, something like that. Then maybe pushing it, but if you give him some training on the start and everything, his level of explosiveness is a guy like AJ Ferrari is obviously gonna have a better start, right? Because he's so explosive from a position that you're not meant to be explosive out of, which is just off your knees.
Yeah.
You know, and that just goes to me. People hate it, but that's a Jordan Burroughs.
I was just about to say that.
That comparison seems outrageous, but it's really not. He's moving just as quick, but with a lot more power. And that's actually insane because you never know. He's qualified for the trials now. And he's going 97. That's more of a natural weight. This cut hurt him. That's not a healthy AJ Ferrari. That's a sucked out AJ Ferrari. And he just dominated and won national title. I don't know if he can beat Kyle Snyder, but like at this point, like I would not count anything out. One double goes right to the bat. Cox versus Snyder would be close though either way. Again, Jaden Cox, his defense is irrelevant off a blast double.
That's fair.
You know, that's what Kyle Snyder has been so good against Jaden Cox. Colin Moore, I think, is still going to be the biggest sleeper, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. He's just been dominating on the world scene, just completely overlooked. Jaden Cox has the bye to the semis. Somebody's going to be in there. It's going to be AJ Ferrari, Jacob Casper, Kyvan Gadson, Colin Moore, Mike Machiavelli. One of those guys. Or Braxton Amos. Yeah. Ooh, Amos versus Ferrari will probably be in national finals. I have Beard placing third next year. I don't think that's biased. I think Beard beats me next year. I think Beard's, again, going to be a guy who's going to progress. I think Braxton Amos is going to be a guy who's going to progress. I think Amin really shouldn't. I don't like Amin at 97. I think Amin. Who's Michigan's 184?
Fuck if I know.
Dude, I think Amin could have won 184. That's what pisses me off right here. Like, obviously, I wanted Brooks to win, but like Amin could have won 184.
So wait, what's the situation at Michigan next year then? Is Brookie just going to wrestle? No, he's not going to wrestle heavyweight.
He may. If Paris wants to use the red shirt. I think Brookie may just be done. Brookie may be a guy who's going to be wrestling for Cliff Keen at 97 kgs, because that's where people really forget how much weight some of these upper weights cut. Like, Brookie's not fat, but, like, he cuts a shit ton to make 97.
Yeah, I remember seeing,
213 is, like the perfect weight for him.
Yep.
That's where Snyder fell in, too. That's why Snyder didn't have the – for being a three-time national champ, he was not that dominant at heavyweight. As dominant as he should have been against high-level competition. You know, obviously he dominated lower guys, and so was Gable, so was Paris, so was Kirkland, so was Cassiope.
Yeah.
But when it came to it, Snyder was winning, like, these 3-2 decisions over Adam Kuhn, a guy who he should be much faster than. Uh-huh. And Kuhn was closing gap, but do I think AJ versus Gable is going to happen? Yes. I think they are waiting. They definitely want to get paid. I'm telling you that right now.
It's inevitable.
They're going to do it next season. Either if they can find out a way to make money off it, off a flow matchup, I doubt they're going to bump up in the duel. And AJ is just going to get a lot more shit for that.
Yeah.
But if flow pays them... They're going to be asking for so damn much. I remember Imar refused to take the match against Jordan Burroughs because they didn't give him shit. They gave him like $1,000 or something like that.
I heard about that, yeah.
Everybody's like $1,000 so much, but that's kind of ass.
It's kind of dumb. I saw people in comment section saying, oh, he should be grateful that he gets a shot at him. Like, he fucking beat him before. Like, give him more. Like, there's more to this matchup than just, Burroughs beats him, because he's that's Jordan literally Burroughs. Not guaranteed. Yeah. Imar fucking beat him.
You know, I'm saying the most underrated guy in USA wrestling right now is him.
Yes.
You know, I hate to say, you know, I've said it before, it might piss a lot of people off. Jaden Cox went from the most underrated to the most overhyped. For a guy, you know, not even that being said, it's not like he dominated people in 97. Look how he's been wrestling in 97. Non-Olympic weight classes are always easier. He essentially walked his way through a JV weight class. All the big dogs are at 86 or 97.
That's fair.
What's one? I don't think there's any notable names. Or they're like all backups. You know, they're obviously good. They're just not on the level of Sajulai, Mohammadian, Sharapov, whatever his name is. You know, obviously Kyle Snyder's there too.
Yeah.
You know, I hope that's going to be the best matchup of the Olympics if it happens. Snyder versus Sajulai again, two gold medalists going at it. It's always been hyped up.
Yeah.
And it just comes down to, it's like, there's literally nobody that's a lock for this Olympic team. Biggest lock looks to be David Taylor.
Yeah.
And he has 6-2 win over Gabe Dean. And Gabe Dean's not even qualified for the trials yet. Mm. He has to qualify last chance. If that doesn't happen, he's done. Like, who? I think Mark Hall is going to be a last chance qualifier, too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I think Nick Nevels is qualified for trials at heavyweight. He qualified through last chance in 2020. Hopefully that carries over. But those are, again, round of 16 guys. It's weird. I don't think anybody gets about to this thing. I think Wiz is just sitting in the top half.
Yep.
And that's what scares me about this matchup is Gable has to run through the entire break. He doesn't get a bye anywhere. He's not a world medalist. Gable is Gwiz is game planning for Gable. Gable's not going to be 100% when he comes through that bracket. Gwiz is peaked. He's ready. He's game planning. He's 100%.
Right.
The smallest thing that goes wrong with Gable, it might just be over right there. I'm like, I'll be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if Gwiz takes the two matches to none. And that's what scares me about that. Like, I think either one of them can go claim a bronze.
Right.
Gable looks to be the only one to have an ability to even possibly claim silver or gold.
Yeah.
But yeah. It's like, there's really nothing even going on the scene anymore. It's just like, wow.
Yeah.
AJ Ferrari versus Braxton Amos. Think about it. Like, if I don't know how to feel about this matchup. Ferrari's power, speed, and toughness. Amos's brains.
Yes.
They've both worked out pretty damn well up till this point for them.
Yeah, the problem that always, like, a good, like, double guy presents is that, like, it's hard to be cerebral about that just because if anyone has figured that out, it's Frank Chamizo.
Again, Chamizo is also just an athletic freak. Amos is so good at just, like, not letting you shoot, not letting you set up shots.
Yeah.
That it literally looks like guys aren't trying against him in high school because he shuts you down so well by tying up wrists. Just getting you the slice bit out of position to where if you take a shot, it's going to be easily his points. Yep. The only guy I've seen score on him consistently is this one match against Greg Kirkley. It was like 9-12, and Kirk lost.
Right.
Again, this was back when Kirk was like a 95. It was a while ago, but.
Yeah.
You never know 2024 when Snyder and Cox are older, Kirkley could very well be the guy at that weight class.
Right.
Again, these are guys who are bred to be at that level. You know, obviously, we've been known since a young age. Those guys are going to be the next star. Schultz is going to be a star coming up here. That's a guy who came up. He was like a 106 in middle school.
Yeah.
That's probably not that. That's probably not that small now I think about it. But they're magic. He's wrestled Aaron Brooks. He's wrestled Yanni. He's wrestled Zahid Valencia. Coming up through this. It's very weird. And then, because people forget that Schultz was, like, a lean 195.
Yeah.
And, like, he put on the weight for a reason. Like, he put on the weight because he wanted to be in heavyweight Greco.
Yeah.
You know? If Schultz can get this done, I'll get so much clout first off, but because I said that already, but it would be iconic, like, for years to come.
Yeah.
Like, history has repeated itself. 21 years apart. There's just something about that number. I don't know what it is, but... Dude, we haven't even talked about Ferrari versus Gable that much. There's really nothing to talk about, though.
Gable beats him 9 times out of 10, and I will reserve that 1 time out of 10 simply because it's wrestling and shit can happen, but...
I think if Ferrari is 265, I think it's more of a dead even matchup, but again, he's not. That's all. Again, you're playing what ifs. Ferrari could hold a max of 235, 240 on his frame before he starts to get sluggish.
Yes.
Gable looks slower than he did last season, but that's for the sole fact that he's putting on more size. You have to sacrifice strength versus speed. You know, if you're right here, if your speed only goes down a little bit, but your strength goes up like that, it's worth it. If your speed goes down like this and your strength goes up like that, is it worth it? Probably not.
Yeah.
Because strength is the easiest thing. You can make up for strength. You can't really make up for speed that well. Unless you're that much stronger. Yeah. But he's moving around a guy like Mason Paris. We know how strong Mason Paris is.
I was waiting for Gable to post a video of 670 deadlift, but that's not happening. So
I don't even know if Gable can deadlift 670. That maybe is just a long shot too.
If he can't deadlift 670, it's probably less because of strength and more just because he doesn't deadlift very often.
It's more just leverages. Ferrari has great leverages to deadlift.
That's true.
Like, you take a guy like Ferrari Luke Pletcher, put him in a sumo deadlift, he knows she could probably lift like 400 pounds if she really felt like it. Maybe even 500. I wouldn't be surprised. And those small, shorter guys are built for bench.
Squatting like a minimum of like triple body weight.
100%. I think I've squatted not even close to that. I've squatted like 550 once. You know, people were like, can you deadlift 665? I'm like, on trap bar, maybe. I don't know. But it would have been hilarious if Don Bradley was in that comment section. Somebody came to me and was like, can you deadlift 665? I'm like, fuck yeah, I can, bitch.
Yeah,
that would have been absolutely iconic. I think he might be the only one. Don Bradley is like – Gwiz Dow's definitely deadlifting 700.
Yeah.
I know Paris saying Gable doesn't have the greatest leverages. Because you see he has –
That's what this whole episode should have just been. Just like, who is in the 665-pound deadlift club?
Mason Paris, I know for a fact, can. Kirkfleet cannot. Mason Paris can
probably fucking power clean that if he wants.
I wish. Dude, what's the world's heaviest power clean? Like 570 pounds or something like that, I think. Lasha Talatasic.
Let me look up Lasha.
Yeah, Lasha probably. What's his max clean and jerk? It's like 265 kilos. Jerk.
Well, I saw a video this morning of him breaking world records in training.
Yeah, because his world record.
Yeah, his clean and jerk is 264 kilos, yeah. So that's going to be, what, a little over
568 or something like that, I think it was when I put in the calculator.
And then his snatch is 220 kilos, which, listen.
They haven't went up, but he's obviously peaking.
You can talk about, like, a deadlift all you want. In my mind, this is the strongest dude on the planet.
Oh, 100%. Functional strength-wise, he's the strongest dude on the planet.
He's putting 500 pounds over his fucking head. Like,
and he's you have to consider, he has to move it there with speed also.
Yeah.
And that's the epitome of strength. I don't like these. That's more impressive than deadlifting 1,000. 1,000 pounds is 1,000 pounds. You can compare the Hafthor Bjornsson. They're the strongest in their own field. There's no real way to measure that. Because, again, those guys aren't natural. He's 6'9", 440 pounds, deadlifts 1,100 pounds, right?
Yep.
Right, I don't think not being natural can really be used against him in this case because it's legal within the sport. They're going to do it. Then you have powerlifting where you have guys like Julius Maddox who benches like 780 pounds, looking for 800-pound raw bench. And Kaylor Willem is like the deadlift prodigy, or Yuri Belkin, that's what it is. Like a 970-pound deadlift, but he's built perfectly for it. Kaylor Willem, Dr. Deadlift. Kaylor Willem, too. Yeah. I think Yuri Belkin edges out Kaylor Willem a little bit. But Willem's beats a 220, like almost a 500-pound bench. But with them, it's more about technique, right? Strongmen, you know, obviously technique, but it's more just pure brute strength than it would be in other sports.
Well, they also deadlifted differently because the rules for a lift in strongman and powerlifting are different.
Yeah, that's why Eddie Hall's 500 kg deadlift. I don't want to be that guy, but that's not legit. You can't. It doesn't count towards powerlifting standards.
If they did,
it counts towards his standards. Again, powerlifters don't train the hitch. That's the reason. Because you could have 10 pounds Kaylor Willem's deadlift, he wouldn't be able to hitch it up. For the sole fact that when you're moving that much weight and it's going up and down, it's going to cause you to snap that momentum real quick. Again, Kaylor Willem's a freak. You know, he rips the bar off the ground. He doesn't pull the bar off the ground. Like, they tell you not to jerk the bar off the ground. He does it. He does it very fucking well at that. You see, like, the little load of the hips at the end when he lifts?
Well, because he pulls the slack out very quickly.
No, he pulls the slack out and he has his arms set, then he just shoots his hips to get the most power possible. And to stop your back from rounding, because you push your hips forward and up rather than pulling the bar up.
Yep.
Like, he does it so – and he does it with hook grip too. But yeah, I don't. Is there anything else left to say about this? I don't even know what we're going off about. But
what the hell are you gonna title this? Just miscellaneous bullshit. I don't know.
Possibly, we're still going with AJ versus Gimp. Sorry, I have the thumbnails made. But all right, any final words?
I know, not really.
All right, so a little different of an episode today. Not really much to talk about. We'll probably do an episode on the Olympic trials, last chance qualifier, all that stuff that's going on. You already know we got to do that. New Jersey wrestling season. Might try to get on a couple guys. Jimmy Mullen, if you're watching this. But that being said, thank you guys for watching episode 65 of Late Night Shots, and we'll see you guys again next time.
All right, peace.